This podcast is proudly produced and presented by the Zoomer Podcast Network, home of great podcasts like Marilyn Lightstone Reads, Idea City on the Air, and The Garden Show. You're listening to an exclusive podcast of The Garden Show with Charlie Dobbin, heard every Saturday morning at 9 on Zoomer Radio, the new AM 740. Welcome, friend, to our weekly garden party. We hope you brought along your questions because it's time to dish the dirt. On The Garden Show with Charlie Dobbin, exclusively on Zoomer Radio.
Good morning and welcome to The Garden Show. Of course, you're not, well, not of course, but, you know, update. You're not going to hear the pearly notes of Dean Holland today. He is off practicing some Christmas carol or something event, because you know him, he's such a performer. But we have a very special guest. You've met him before. He's been on in the studio with me, and he's currently, we're connecting through the wonders of technology. Sean James, welcome to The Garden Show.
Hey, everybody.
Hey, good to see you.
Oh, super excited to be here again.
Hey, listen, you are actually on a job right now.
Like, it's yeah, I got my work clothes on and everything.
Okay, so I'll tell you what, I'm going to, before we get into what you do and how amazing you are at what you do, I just want to give everybody the phone numbers, because we do like to get calls. People have great questions. Sometimes they have tips and tricks. And because you're here and we're going to talk a bit about your specialty, maybe we'll get some great questions about what you do so, you know, remarkably. So the phone numbers for anybody in the GTA to call into the show is 416-360-0740. If you're outside the GTA, call in at 866-740-4740. Owen is standing by. He's just sharp today and ready to go. So, you know, give him a bit of a hard time if you like, because he likes to be teased. And our mantra: call early. Do not wait to the end of the show. Get in early. Call early. Call often if necessary. Call more than once, but one question per call. So, Sean, I just want to give a quick announcement for everybody who's listening. There is a pretty cool, it's an annual event put on by the Milnhouse Garden Club. I bet you know these people. Have you been to Milnhouse Garden Club?
A while, but yes, I have.
They're me too. Great. It's been a while for sure. But they do an annual Christmas event. In this case, it's a workshop. It's actually 1 p.m. to 7 p.m. So it's a big, long workshop on December the 2nd at the Toronto Botanical Gardens. It's to raise money for their education department, most specifically the children's education department. So everyone is invited to attend this workshop. You're going to create a modern festive flower arrangement, and Michael Erdman, it will be the designer and the host of the event. It is $60 for 6 hours. Everything's included, and you're going to walk out with something you're super proud of to take home. 777 Lawrence Avenue East, of course, is where the Toronto Botanical Gardens is. And this event is downstairs in the Floral Hall. So that's pretty fun. But Sean, tell me, okay, I have to tell everybody. So sometimes people send me emails and they go, what is this plant? Or what do I do about this? Or what is this something? And I have the same issue sometimes. And you know who my go-to is? Always Sean James. And like 10 seconds later, he's got the answer, both in, you know, he's got all the background, he's got the proper names, he's got the common names, he's got it all. So he is a very, very smart guy. He's not just a horticulturalist, he's a communications expert, but he's also a naturalist because he knows nature. I think you might be part wolf, actually. Is that possible? Do you think?
Part wolf, part butterfly. It's a weird combination.
Yeah, you were kind of born in nature, right?
Very much. Yeah. Grew up over by Crawford Lake in Campbellville.
Yeah. Yeah. Which is cool. That's I know exactly where that is. So, okay. Some of the things you're most famous for, because many people will know your voice and they'll know about you. You do a lot of speaking engagements to hort societies, yep, et cetera, yep, but eco landscaping. So sustainable landscape design, you know, both you design and install big landscapes, not just for residential, but for public spaces. You've done work all over Ontario, but beyond Ontario as well, I'm sure. Native species, again, is one of the things you really concentrate on. And of course, beauty, the beauty of a sustainable garden.
It's got to be beauty first.
Exactly. And I'd like to talk a bit about rain gardens as a concept. But before we get into rain gardens, and you'll know why, because we just suffered one of the most biggest droughts in the last 50 years here in Prince Edward County. So water was a huge issue. But you're on a job right now. Tell us a bit about where you are and what you're doing.
This is a really cool project, actually. The garden was already really nice. And it was very heavy with native species and especially what we call host species. So plants that certain insects can or even have to feed on so that they can complete their life cycle. And of course, the insects are food for the birds and so on. And what we did is we took that list of plants, blew it apart, and then redesigned it, taking into account texture and form and seasonal interest. So there's vignettes everywhere. We put in a beautiful sculpture, a big bronze water feature that's just gorgeous. Wow. And all permeable pathways everywhere. So every raindrop that falls on the garden stays in the garden. So that waters the whole garden. And then, you know, basically just thinking of it as art and dealing with it that way. The pathways are large and flowing. There are tertiary pathways so you can get into the garden and be part of things and see what things are feeding on what, see what cool butterflies or pollinators are in there. It's going to be absolutely beautiful. And there's layers of plants from early spring, things like Canada wild ginger, right through till, well, all the way through winter, things like sparkleberry, our native deciduous holly, which some people call winterberry, and things like ironweed, which are spectacular in the wintertime. So as it evolves, it's going to be just really, really beautiful, but also fantastic for biodiversity.
Wow. And So you're there today on a frosty morning. So are we moving some things or installing pathways? What are we doing right now?
We're almost done. So today we're doing a little bit of everything, but the last few little areas. So the pathways are almost in. We're using black granite gravel, which is just gorgeous. The flowers are almost all planted in the bulbs. Not everything's native. I think maybe sometimes we get a little too defensive with that. Yeah. And so there's some really neat flower bulbs and some exotic species as well, but with a heavy influence on native. And then we're also building in them a three bin composter.
Yeah.
And there's a whole work area. There's going to be a refugia pile where every stick that falls on the property stays here. Yeah. And then you get things like shrews living in it, and they're great predators.
I didn't know that. Shrews are, what about voles? How do shrews and voles compare?
Shrews can eat baby voles. In fact, shrews, okay, here's a weird thing. I'm a big fan of list.
You're a big fan of weird things, yes?
Well, that's just true. So I'm always trying to take pictures of creatures and catalog them on iNaturalist. And I managed to catch a vole, and he tried to bite my thumb, and he tried to bite my finger. I'm like, just hold still so I can let you go. I just need a picture. And then he looked at this little soft bit of flesh between the thumb and the finger and went, I think I can bite that, and did. Ow. And I got the picture and let him go. And about 2 weeks later, it was still wasn't healing. And I looked it up. Voles are, okay, don't be scared, folks. Voles are our only venomous mammal in North America. They can kill a mouse.
Really?
So that's why it wasn't healing. Like, they're not going to hurt you.
No,
like,
you're not going to die. I mean,
most people aren't going to be dumb enough to pick them up.
that's for sure.
Yeah, but they eat slugs and all sorts of bad things in the garden, and they would eat baby voles as well. So they're going to control most of the problems that you would have in a garden. And we also have some big trees here and some places for raptors to perch. So they've been cleaning up the voles as we've watched. We had a hawk fly down, take a vole out of the garden, and then sit on the fence post rather gruesomely. Yeah. And gobble it up. Yeah, it wasn't pretty. It was fascinating, but it wasn't pretty.
Oh, I shouldn't laugh. You're right. It's not the kind of thing you want to do before breakfast. You'd rather kind of watch that later in the day.
Yes.
So how big, just one quick more question. How big is this property you're working on? Is it huge?
It's a standard 80s size lot. It's not gigantic. It's probably 104 by 84. There we go.
There you go.
It's a big yard,
good
but it's
size,
not enormous. I'm watching a nuthatch eat bugs right now, which is kind of cool. Focus shot.
I love nuthatches.
Oh, they're adorable. They're absolutely cutest. Adorable. And it's really cool. They've also got the frits on the window, the little spots that stop the birds.
Oh, great.
So very, very cool.
Very cool. That's what I need.
I think everybody needs that. Billions of birds a year die that way.
Yeah, exactly. So listen, we are, I know, and I don't even want to go there because can be a sad thing. So we have a couple of callers waiting to talk to us. So for now, we're just going to go to a quick break and we'll be right back.
Don't change stations just because the weather changes. Garden tips and advice all year round. This is The Garden Show with Charlie Dobbin, exclusively on Zoomer Radio.
And today it's The Garden Show with Charlie Dobbin and Sean James, master gardener, horticulturalist supreme, and naturalist. Not naturist, but naturalist. I love that. I love that differentiation. So do have a couple callers, but I want to remind everybody that let's talk a bit about how to create sustainable gardens. Let's talk about the effect on the environment when we choose the right plant for the right place. Let's talk about soil. Let's talk about pollinators. Let's talk about anything that leads to less work for us because the garden is self-sustaining. Sean is an absolute specialist on this, and I'm always happy to chat about it as well. Phone numbers here, 416-360-0740. Outside Toronto, 866-740-4740. And in the meantime, let's say hello to Mary. She's calling from Toronto. Good morning.
Good morning.
Hey, Mary.
Hello.
What's going on at your place?
Hello?
Hello.
Yeah, could I get the name of any organic fertilizer for my house plants, please?
Oh, good question. Organic fertilizer for house plants. Sean, do you have any thoughts on that?
I have two thoughts. My first thought instantly was, I don't do it. If plants can't stand on their own two roots, they're out. And then I thought, well, there are exceptions. I make my own compost, and then I make compost tea from that. So it's got every living thing in it microbially. And then I water the plants with that so that it's really, in a way, it's about soil stewardship. You're giving them nutrients, but you're also giving them all the good and bad creepy crawlies that are going to make the plant be healthy.
So you use the compost tea on your indoor plants as well?
I do, actually. Yeah.
Well, creepy crawlies, they're microscopic. It's not like they're, you know, you're watering centipedes.
Bacteria, fungi, even viruses, they're all part of nature, and they all work together to create a whole soil ecosystem. And that's, you mentioned the garden too.
Yeah.
That's what is important in the garden as well, is soil stewardship.
Well, exactly. And of course, that's what an organic fertilizer is. It's a fertilizer that's typically slow release, and it feeds not just the plant, but the soil, the roots, the everything around the plant. When I heard Mary ask her question, I thought of fish fertilizer, fish emulsion, which has been around forever. People worry that it's going to smell bad, but it's fine. It doesn't smell fishy. You just mix, it's a concentrate. You mix it with water, you water your plants. The other thing I've been using, I got it from West Coast Seeds. It's llama poo. Okay. Llama poo, little dried up turds of llama poo. And you just jam, you remember the old Job sticks that everybody loved because you could jam them into the soil with your finger? Same idea, but in this case, it's completely organic. And again, doesn't smell bad at all. You just jam down under the soil and very slowly it decomposes and feeds the plants.
Okay. And West Coast Seeds is great.
Yes, I do appreciate a lot of their products.
Yeah.
Thank you, Mary. Great, great, great question. Good question for Sean, too. We like to keep him on his toes. We've got Wilma on the line now, and she's calling from Holstein. Good morning, Wilma.
Good morning to everyone. I have a hibiscus that I started from one of my old plants. Mm-hmm. It's about a foot high right now. It sat outside all summer, and it actually did have a bloom on it. It's so small, I can't believe it, but it did have a bloom.
Yeah.
Now, I brought it inside, and I do see a very small green shoot coming from the bottom just above the ground.
Okay.
But it is just one stem, and there is leaves on the top of it, but not much on the bottom. I wondered if I should take out the center of the top of it, if it would branch out.
So that's a great question, because now's the time to do it. When we have young plants, whether it's a young, you know, tropical plant inside the house or young plants out in our garden, whether shrubs, trees, all of it, the time to look at the framework, the skeleton of the plant, is when they're young. That's when we can modify and change, you know, make them aesthetically appropriate and attractive and maximize things like leaves and flowers. So hibiscus is pretty good. It's a pretty tough plant. I would pinch the top and probably not do a lot more at this point. So just the very top bud might be about a quarter inch, half an inch, just with your thumb or a sharp pair of scissors. Just take that top off and suddenly you're going to get some side branches. Okay. Not suddenly, but over the next few months. In the spring, then we'll talk more about how to make it better.
It took it almost a year to really come alive and start roots. So I thought, well, you're determined anyway.
But hey, maybe you need some of that.
I've actually got two of them, and some of the stalks are at least an inch and a half across. That's how long I've had these plants.
Wow. Well, you know what? Timing is everything. When we try and take cuttings at this time of year from tropical plants, it's very slow to get them going. If you could do your cuttings in the spring, February, March, you'll have, you know, a nursery before you know it.
So, and that's when you'll start to see the growth really begin too, is when the light levels start going up. Plants sense that and they're like, well, it's time.
Yeah.
And
off they go. They wake up, because right now even houseplants are slowing down, except there's a few Christmas cactus and stuff.
The trouble was they were so big outside that I had to cut them back to bring them back in the house.
Yeah. Well, you see, so this is a good point again, Wilma. The time to cut back. So you know how much a hibiscus will grow over the summer outside.
Yeah.
And this is true for other, like oleander and Diplodini and all those plants. We know we want to bring them in the fall. So we do our hard pruning in the spring as we take them out, you know, when we're frost-free, enjoy them all summer. And now we don't have to prune them in the fall because they aren't out of control. If we try to bring them in, they're too big.
Would cutting them off in the spring not kill the buds, though, that's to come over the summer?
No, not at all. Hibiscus can form a bud in about 2 minutes.
And remember that pruning promotes vigor.
Yeah, and they also, the flowers only last about 2 minutes. I mean, it's one of those things. You want to cut it back and promote vigor through pruning.
Okay.
All right.
Okay.
Thank you, Wilma.
Bye.
Well, talk again soon. And we are going to just dash away, though we're not going very far, and be right back after this.
Fur and feathers and bugs of all size. There's more going on in the garden than you realize. Should small creatures become a big problem, then you've got The Garden Show with Charlie Dobbin. Exclusively on Zoomer Radio.
Alrighty, we are here. We have no callers on the line, so please feel free. You can call in 416-360-0740 or 866-740-4740 and speak with me or Sean about anything you'd like to talk about. Mary did just quickly call in to say she didn't get a chance to write down our suggestions, Sean. So Mary is standing by with a pencil and paper, and your recommendation was for organic houseplant fertilizer.
So I don't use a lot of fertilizer. If the plants can't stand on their own two roots, tough. I find something else to put in that little bit of window. But I do make my own compost. And if something really needs it, then I will make compost tea.
Mm-hmm. So it's a bucket with a shovel full of compost and some water, and it sits for a couple of days. And then you run it through a sieve or whatever. Now you've got a liquid.
Can even put the compost into like a old pair of pantyhose or cheesecloth.
Right.
And that way it's a little bit easier. And if you want to get really fancy, and you have an aquarium bubbler, then you put that in too.
Right.
And then that's called aerated compost.
That's heat. Right. And it's even better.
Yeah. I think we might have a video on that.
Sure.
We do a lot on YouTube as well. So
that's right. So that's a good point. Your company is called
Sean James Consulting and Design. And if you just search Sean James Consulting on pretty much any social media platform, you'll find us. And we're always posting whatever strikes our fancy that day. That seems like people might be interested in it. So
Good point. You are very chatty on this on social.
That's very chatty.
Sean, S-E-A-N, James.
Good point.
Yes. All right. That's all good. So listen, a little bit about rain gardens. I want to talk about, so there's actually, I think, a certificate in rain garden design. Did you ever
do
that? You can
get Fusion certified. Fusion. And that is actually even cooler because it's rain gardens glued to drought-tolerant landscaping. So minimizing the amount of water drops that you bring onto your property and maximizing the amount of raindrops that fall on your property that you keep on your property.
Right.
And then you plant plants that suit the soil. We don't fight the soil anymore. You water them a lot. There's an irony with drought tolerant plants. So you have to water them a lot for the first year, excuse me, an inch a week. And once you've done that, then you're gravy, unless there's a really major drought, in which case, you know, after 3 weeks or so, you water it deeply once and you leave it for a while.
And
it's very cool.
And hope you have water to do so. So,
well, yes. And Landscape Ontario, our provincial professional trade group, has a listing of Fusion certified professionals. Mm-hmm. If you go to their website, just search Landscape Ontario, and you can find the Fusion certified people there, which is cool.
Designers, if that's the way you'd like to go in terms of doing a redesign, or you're building, or you know, you've moved and you want to make, again, it's all about sustainability. It's about not being a slave to your garden, not being a slave to a lawn.
And well, that's garden.
I really am. Love it.
And the cool thing is that a lot of people are doing this now. We're incredibly busy using people's plants on site to redesign their whole property,
because
the plants are already adapted to the site. A lot of people, we got to make these things. You mentioned beauty. We got to make them beautiful. So people buy in. We need them to buy into these concepts.
Because when the whole native plant idea, you know, really concentrate on native plants, that was good 20 years ago, became the thing. If you weren't planting native plants, there was something wrong with you. Then, and it was like, but they look like goldenrod. You want me to plant goldenrod? Like, really? And so there was this whole thing of, but they're not like pretty, like we like roses. And
there
stuff.
Are some great goldenrods.
I know there are.
Like fireworks goldenrod is one of my favorites, and zigzag goldenrod for the shade. And 350 species of insects have to feed on goldenrod. They're a great plant, and they don't cause allergies. Still, there's still some people who don't know that.
I know.
Ragweed just has an insipid green flower, so we don't notice it.
Exactly.
But there are some really amazing, like wild blue indigo is a spectacular plant. Blooms in June with a rich, deep purple blue flower. All the milkweeds. Now, some of the milkweeds are thugs.
Yes.
Just like you don't want Canada goldenrod in your garden, you probably, most people don't want common milkweed, but marsh milkweed smells like spiced vanilla. It blooms forever. You get really cool things coming to feed on it. Butterfly milkweed with its bright orange flowers looks great with purple comb flower and little blue stem.
And it's like, very drought tolerant.
Oh, good Lord. Yeah. And there are plants that we can overuse that are boring. And there are other plants, native plants, that are spectacular. And I have no problem with augmenting. So there's a plant called a pearly everlasting that blooms in the fall, little blue stem with all its bright colors in the fall, and a plant called sea kale, Crambi maritima, that has big quilted blue leaves and flowers that smell like honey. That's not native at all, but it gives me that bold texture because it's all about texture.
True.
So you get the grassy and the feathery and the bold. Stunning and months of interest, even winter.
Yeah, lovely. Sounds gorgeous. So, okay, this is a bit of an aside, but we know there's Canada goldenrod, and it's nothing special. But the Europeans took Canada goldenrod back to Europe, I think mostly the UK, and started working on it. And they were the ones that did all these improvements and actually, of course, patented cultivars for better goldenrod than what naturally grows here. And then, of course, we buy it back. Because they did a good job on making our plants look better.
Easeweed's a good example of that too.
Yes. Do we still consider that a native plant?
So there's a lot of debate about these things, and I don't like to get too rabid about anything, but we call those nativars, cultivars of native plants. And I have no problem with nativars. Apparently, if it has burgundy leaves, it's less attractive to the things that might nibble on the leaves. And if it has variegated leaves, then it's more attractive. But generally speaking, they still satisfy the eco niche. And something like a grape plant is purple dome aster. And it's almost exactly the same plant, but perfect purple dome about a foot and a half tall. So it's a really good garden plant. So it's still going to be fed upon by the same butterflies and moths and bees, and things like crescent butterflies are still going to feed on the leaves, no problem. So I'm okay with nativars. And many of the grasses, for instance, like some of the switchgrasses, like my favorite Blood Brothers, those are not bred to look that way. We're not manipulating it at all. Right. We're selecting, you know, you're walking through a field and you go, oh, that one's nice and upright.
Beautiful
burgundy color. So I'm okay with nativars.
Yeah, okay. Yeah, I agree with you. It's not like there's a GMO thing going on here. Like,
no,
sometimes people do worry about that, right?
I know.
That's good that they care. It is. Absolutely. I agree. Listen, we got some callers waiting. Let's see what's going on up on the lines here. Looks like Diana's calling in from Mississauga. Good morning.
Good morning.
Morning. What's happening at your place?
I called in a while ago, Charlie, asking about my plumerias that have gotten very, very large and whether or not I was going to be able to trim down the roots or whether I would be able to transplant them just by snipping back something there to make them a little more manageable. And I thought you weren't able to answer at the time. I'm wondering whether Sean knows anything about plumerias.
Good point. John, what do you know about plumeria?
I'll be honest, I have not. I've only tried twice, but I have not had great luck. Keeping them at the right moisture level for me has been challenging, because if it's too wet, they rot, and if it's too dry, they go dormant.
Right.
And they need, my experience, and not a plumeria expert, but they need a lot of light. They're a tropical plant, like, and a full sun drought tolerant plant. I know people, the one person I know who has a great deal of success lets them go dormant in the winter and then brings them out and puts them outside in the summer. So they don't try and keep them alive. They don't try and keep them active in the winter. They just put them somewhere cool and dark, like you would dahlias.
Go ahead, Diana. Yeah.
I've always brought them in the wintertime and just let them go dormant, and they'll lose all the leaves and everything, but then in the spring you start watering them, a little fertilizer, and off they go. It's just that they just get so big because they are intended to be trees, right?
I would not hesitate to cut them back outside in the spring because they have a latex sap that can irritate some people, I think.
Yeah.
Right. So I would cut them back just like one would hibiscus. Be as brutal as you like. As we mentioned earlier, the pruning promotes vigor.
Right. So again, do that in the spring so that you've got a good looking plant all summer. You know, it's shorter, it's more dense, it's got a better aesthetic value.
And they bloom on new wood.
Just here quickly, it's saying in spring or early summer, prune away the lower branches if you're kind of growing it as a tree. Cutting as a 45 degree angle, prevent water, of course, from pooling on the cut surfaces, will reduce the risk of rot. That sort of thing. So yeah, be brutal. I think Sean summed it up quite nicely there.
Okay. We'll give that a try. I'll get back to you and let you know how it works out.
All right. Thank you. Thanks for calling. All right. There's always a tough one. You know, I always like to say, I know a lot. I don't know it all, but I know a lot.
Yeah.
And you're the same, I'm sure. I mean, I think
you're never going to know it all. That's a wonderful thing about horticulture. There's always stuff to learn.
That's right. And it's often changing too. It's not static at all. There's always new things and philosophical changes along the way, right? All right. We have Stephanie calling, and I can't read this very well. Stephanie is, I can't read this. Maybe you can see. Good morning, Stephanie.
How are you?
Excellent. Calling from Erie, Pennsylvania.
Yes, we are. My husband and I listen to your show every Saturday, unless I have to go to work early in the morning. But we both are gardeners out here in our little yard, and he helps me with my fencing, herbs, and weeding and things. My question is, I have a seed tower I bought from a local garden place called Hortzman's. And it's a seed tower without the seeds covers on the seed. It's like a hull, like the sunflower hull.
Right.
But I have no birds coming to it.
Are they sunflower hearts that you've put out? So sunflower seeds with no shells?
Yeah, it's just a tower with just the sunflower inside seeds.
Oh, okay.
And I have different suets out there, different bird seed. I have regular black oil sunflower seeds in a tray for the chickadees and cardinals. Mm-hmm. But I'm nothing is coming after the seed tower.
Did the tower come with full of seed when you bought it?
Yeah, it was in a plastic container, and it was discounted. I had to cut the plastic container off of the tower to screw it onto the feeder.
Right. Okay, my impulse, because, you know, Paul Oliver from the Urban Nature Store is a sponsor of the show, and he's got answers for every reason why birds and urban nature does what it does. But if I was channeling Paul Oliver right now, I would say that bird seed is not good. It's old, and it's not attracting the birds. It doesn't smell good. It might have just been sitting in a hot warehouse somewhere. And of course, seeds are full of oil. Oil goes rancid, and birds know it. They won't touch it if it's not yummy for them. So I would think that's why they're avoiding it. It's just not, that seed is not viable. Perhaps you can get some fresh new seed into that tower if it's a good looking, you know, a good setup. But I think you're probably wasting your time hoping they'll come to that seed.
Also, where you set your feeder is important. Birds like to have about 30% cover, 30% shrubs or what have you, where if the hawk comes, they can fly to that. So it's tempting to have it right out in front of the window. But having shrubs nearby, like a juniper or some thick dogwoods or something like that, gives them a place to feel comfortable. So they go from there to the feeder, and you're going to get more birds if you can do that.
Oh, because I have a clematis vine right near, and across our yard's 40 foot by 25. And I have a bunch of branches we laid up against the garage for covering for the birds. They love the bird feed over there in the suet.
Yeah.
So I should just throw that seed out then.
I think
And even putting out jumping the gun a bit, but putting out your Christmas tree after is a really neat thing to do. That gives them shelter, even if it's on its side.
Yeah, the juncos love it.
Yeah, and they're adorable.
Yeah, exactly.
So we don't have fence coverage. We have a catalpa tree that has already lost its leaves.
Yeah.
We have a red maple that comes up between the fencing. Between us and the neighbors, but they come to everything but that seed tower. So I'm just going to go throw it out then.
I think so. Or you know, try sticking it in the compost. But either way, I think start again with that feeder. Thanks so much for calling, and it's always nice to hear from our neighbors to the south. All right, we are getting some. You know, the lines are busy, Sean. So let's race off to our next caller. We've got Susan calling in from Burlington. Good morning, Susan.
Good morning. Thank you for taking my call. I had discovered or seen a new to me plant this spring summer. It's like a very broadleaf dusty miller or a huge lens quarters, although not that tall. And I liked it so much, and I bought a couple of planters that had it. I couldn't find it as a standalone plant at any garden center. I had to buy a whole planter to get some of it.
Yeah.
I've harvested it out of those containers, and I brought it inside. I have a bit of a little greenhouse set up in my basement. But I'm wondering if you think it would be possible to propagate it over the winter or in the spring to put out next year in the garden, because I couldn't find it as individual plants at any garden center.
Right.
Is it angel wings, maybe?
I know. I'm trying to think what it is.
The leaves are about 4 inches long and 3 to 4 inches wide. No serration on the edges, just a big, smooth, gray, velvety, lovely-looking plant.
Yeah, it could be angel wings, Dusty Miller.
Oh, yeah.
It's newish and lovely.
Yeah. So either way, bottom line, what I would do, Susan, you've got the plants, you've got them dug out of the big containers into individual containers now.
Yeah.
I would hold them in your greenhouse, in your basement, watering sparingly, keeping the lights frankly, I'd probably keep the lights on 12 hours a day, 12 hours off, assuming you've got
That's
supplementary lighting.
Currently.
And don't fertilize, don't do anything to get them to do anything too rapid in the way of growth right now. But I would care for them, keep them happy, you know, only water when they're fairly dry. And then once we get to February or March, you're going to start to see a burst of growth. And at that point, take a bunch of cuttings.
Okay.
That's what
I
would do.
Kind of like just one main central stem, unlike a traditional dusty miller that has more branching. This seems to all come off the one central stem. So I didn't know whether individual leaves could be propagated.
It's possible not. If you want to try and cause, I mean, they are going to bush out naturally anyway, but if you wanted to right now, just pinch that top tip. Uh-huh. And that will force some side branching, which will then be what you'll be taking the cuttings from. Because you want 2 to 3 inches of fresh new growth in the spring before you start taking all your cuttings. It's like when we bring in geraniums, right? They come in as the mother geranium, and then we just rape and pillage a bunch of daughters off of them with some sharp scissors once they really start to sprout in the spring or late winter. And before
and because
you
know they're it, yeah. fuzzy, Charlie, I would make sure I'd use something like a cactus mix or add sand or perlite extra so that they don't rot before they make roots.
Right. Good point. There is a tendency for silver plants to rot. Yeah, don't mist or anything like that. Okay. Silver plants are beautiful, though, when we're talking about textures and colors and aesthetic beauty. Some of the silvers out there are lovely. Mm-hmm. Mostly they need full sun, something to consider as well.
Right.
Well, thank you very much for your call, Susan.
Great.
All right. We will have to just blast away for grab a cup of coffee and be right back after this.
Daffodils and daisies, bluebells and begonias, forsythia and foxgloves, marigolds, magnolia, lavender and lupins, dahlias, delphiniums, stocks, fox, hollyhocks, tulips and sweet williams.
You've picked the right place for everything floral. This is The Garden Show with Charlie Dobbin, exclusively on Zoomer Radio.
It sure is The Garden Show, and we're all over the map today. We've been just all over the continent, but also talking about such a diverse topics. Sean James is here. He's not in the studio. He's in his client's house, actually, taking a break from a job. I'm in my home studio in Prince Edward County. You're in Waterdown, I guess, Sean.
I am.
And of course, Owen's in charge from downtown Toronto, Liberty Village. So I guess all this diverse calls and diverse questions kind of make sense because we're all over the place as well. Our next caller is Paul calling in from Dundas, and I have a feeling I know who Paul is. Good morning, Paul.
Good morning, Charlie. Morning, Sean.
Hey.
How are you doing, Paul?
I am excellent.
Good. Are you at work too?
I am not at work. I am doing a volunteer stint at a charity bazaar in town.
Ah. Nice.
Yeah.
Good.
So
what's going on?
I may be a first time caller, but I don't think I need my garden wings.
Okay. Hold on. Let's get some wings for you.
I don't need them.
Yeah. Everybody needs wings. Everybody needs wings. There it is. You got them. You can now get up and get a good view.
All right. I know I should have called before. A couple of weeks ago when you had Paul on the air, but I bought a couple of, noticing that there are fewer and fewer actual wooden barns being put up, and there's no place for swallows and robins to nest, I bought a couple of bird boxes that are specifically designed for swallows and robins.
Okay.
I don't know where to put them. Will the birds hang in them if they're swinging in a tree, or do
Not
they
robins.
Have to be attached? Do they have to be attached to something solid?
I put mine under the eaves, about a foot down under the eaves, and you probably want to check what the recommendations are for how far down from the eaves. But I also got a cup nesting platform, so to speak, and I put it about a foot down under the eaves on my house.
Right. And you just run a big long, you know, not a 2x4, but something, you know, more like 2x8 down, whatever it is, a foot or so from the eaves. And then robins will build a nest on that platform. You don't have to actually even put a house there. Can you do that? That's right.
Platform nesters.
Yeah, can you do that, Paul, or attach them? Yeah, we'll have to. All right, thank you. But you know what? That's something that we'll have to just get Paul Oliver to give you the best, or I can look it up. We can just talk about best height, because so often with any bird, you know, home, it's got to be at the right height for that bird. It, sun, shade, wind, direction. Some birds, yeah, they need
hole size for the ones that are cavity nesters.
Sure, because they need like an open area out front for when the babies fledge, and then others need protection out front so that the babies, you know, can jump to that tree. And there's all these different ways and reasons for different species. So thanks. Good question, Paul. We got to talk more about that next time we get Paul Oliver on.
Thank you very much.
Happy working hard there and enjoy your wings.
Have a wonderful day, y'all.
Nice to hear from you. Paul DeGroot, one of my favorite people. He's just, he's an amazing person. And he's president of your fan club, Sean.
We're president of each other's fan clubs. He knows an incredible amount.
He does. I know.
I ask him a lot of questions and vice versa.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, he's pretty special. So listen, let's see. We've got Lena on the line calling in from Toronto. Good morning, Lena.
Good morning. I'm calling regarding my aloe vera plant.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
Can you hear me?
Yes, yes, go ahead.
Yeah, it's not growing at all. Since the last 5 months, it's got only 5 leaves, and they are really thin leaves. Oh. So I'm wondering how to get it growing.
All right, so it's just been, where have you got it in your house?
In the living room.
Okay, and is it in a window?
No, it's not in a window. It's a little away from the window, but yeah, it gets light all day.
Okay, well, it would be happier. Like, if you really want to see some real growth on that plant, it needs to be in the brightest spot you can give it. So southern windows being the best, western windows being the next best, right on the window ledge is totally appropriate for aloe vera.
Okay, that's what I'm doing wrong. Okay.
Yeah, and also be careful with watering. Make sure, feel the soil. And the rule with aloe vera, just like jade plants, feel the soil. If it feels dry and you think you should water, don't.
Yeah.
Wait another week.
Okay, I normally do it within 2 to 3 weeks. I don't do it every week.
Good. And as winter comes, we find that plants use even less water. So, in the summer and spring, we've got all that sun and we've got growth usually, but in the winter, not so much. So don't expect a bunch of growth for the next month or two or three, but in the spring, yes. And turn the plant, turn it 180 degrees every Sunday or whatever in the window.
Okay. That's an idea. Okay. Thank you. Thank you so much.
Yeah. Thank you for calling. All right, we will be right back after this.
Don't change stations just because the weather changes. Garden tips and advice all year round. This is The Garden Show with Charlie Dobbin, exclusively on Zoomer Radio.
All righty, we have Jennifer on the line calling in from Alton. Good morning, Jennifer.
Hi, I'm actually in Oliphant.
Oliphant.
Near Owen Sound. But
I have a
question about my my urban rain garden down in Dundas, and I want to know what Sean's idea is about pruning native plants back. Like, I've got quite a few in my rain garden, but I'm afraid if I leave them all to seed, I'm going to have a mess of unwanted seedlings in the spring. So do I selectively prune back?
Like at this time of year, you mean? Like when the
there are some plants that seed very heavily: ironweed, New England asters, a couple of the goldenrods can do that. In different soil, there'll be different aggressiveness, so you kind of have to monitor what you're getting a lot of. The tall coreopsis can be horrible. Those I deadhead. I'd love to leave them for the birds, but it's just not practical in some cases. But you kind of have to go by your garden and cut back. And then I green bin them. I don't put them in the compost, or in the municipal landscape waste bags.
Okay. That's great. Yeah. Thank you.
Right. So that's a bit of a study in patience. Like, first you have to go through a year and see who's doing their
A little aggressive.
Yeah, some can be. But you know what? I grow, you were talking about milkweed, I grow the orange flower, the butterfly weed, and it actually seeds itself quite a lot. And it's,
you have very sandy soil. Certain things are really aggressive in sandy soil.
Exactly. And so I get, I have all these people who desperately want to grow it. And of course I'll give them seeds, no problem. But then I thought, oh, here I am pulling these little seedlings and composting them. Maybe I should just start potting those up and giving them to people. Then they don't have to worry about growing seeds.
Give them to your local garden club too for their plants.
Yeah, exactly. Because it's just lots of sun and, you know, like you say, a well-drained soil is what makes them happy. All right. We have time, I think, for one more caller. This is Alan calling in from Thornhill. Good morning, Alan.
Good morning.
How are you today?
I'm fantastic. How are you guys doing?
Excellent. Great. What's really going good on?
Well, I have a lot of plants in the house, but I'm no good at naming what they are. But I know a few of them. At the end, they're big leaf. And at the end of the leaf, they're getting rusty and like old. And I cut them back, but I don't know if I'm watering it too much or not watering enough.
Okay, so there's no one answer to this. Generally, when people are having tips of the leaves of the houseplants, when the tips are turning black or brown, we suspect that the water was too cold. Is it possible that it's come straight out of the tap?
You know what I do? Overnight, I put it in big jugs and I let them, there's not hot or cold. It's just the
room
right
temperature.
I know
that. Okay, and then the sitting out, like you say, in jugs is good because, again, we can do a certain amount of evaporating off of some of the chlorine and fluoride that is added to municipal water. I mean, best case scenario, you do what I did. You empty your rain barrel into buckets, and then you bring the buckets in the house, and you use those for watering your houseplants until you don't have any rainwater left.
Right.
So those two things come to mind. When it comes to black tips, we make sure you don't have hot air drafts from the furnace blowing on tropical plants. You've got vent deflectors, or the plants are not over or near vents. Avoid drafts. You know, front doors opening and closing can cause black on some plants. What else?
It could be salt buildup too. Mm-hmm. Sometimes I take... if they have good drainage, sometimes I actually take them into the shower with me and let extra water flow through, and that washes out some of the salts.
Oh.
And if they don't have good drainage, then every once in a while, I'll strip a plant and use fresh potting mix for house plants, and that gets rid of the problem with salt buildups as well.
Right. And always make sure you have holes, drainage
holes. For a lot of years, so.
Well, it sounds like you're doing something right. They sound pretty good. Yeah, and the trimming of the tips, you know, spider plants, it's just, there's no one answer, but each plant has its own needs. So keep working at it. It sounds like you've got quite a little jungle there.
I sure do. I love plants in the house, especially in the bedroom. three plants at least there.
Nice.
I think they're good.
Lots of oxygen.
You know, it's good
fresh
for you.
Fresh. It brings oxygen into the room and it filters. Like, that's the cool thing. A lot of plants are great filters. So good stuff. Thanks, Alan. Nice to hear from you. We don't have much time left. Sean, I know you are just, want to get out there and get working on that garden that you are looking at right now through the window. But can you give us a few little words about what are your plans this winter? Like, are you going to be doing design over the winter, or what do you do?
We're doing it. We've got some really neat designs in the hopper this winter. We fix all the stuff that we broke in the summer, and I've got a lot of public speaking gigs coming up. And also we're doing more with the social media. So we're trying to put together some neat things like an online eco landscape design course, which we might be offering through Patreon. And we've got some deep end of the pool speeches that we're posting on Patreon as well, which is kind of neat. So again, search Sean James Consulting and you can find some of these neat things that we're working on. So always fun to have.
S-E-A-N jamesconsulting.com for all kinds of good stuff. You're quite educational.
Actually, if you're going to find the website,
or .ca.
It's Sean James-consulting.ca.
Got it. Yeah. .ca. Yeah. Sweet. Thank you. Thank you. It's been a ton of fun having you here.
I
didn't get a chance to talk to you about, you know, I whined and I've stopped whining now, but about lack of water where I live and, you know, my well going dry. But the good news is we've had some rain. The well is recharging. So we're getting back into a more normal environment here. But boy, was it a really drought intensive summer here. Hot, hot, windy, windy, dry, dry. So amazing. Thank you again. I was going to say the other thing is my lawn, of course, turned crispy yellow more than once, but then a little bit of rain greened right up again. Amazing. You always think they might not make it, but they do. Thank you, Owen. You're the best. Thank you for, you're like an air traffic controller there. Thank you, Sean. Have a great day. And to the great callers. Yeah, keep that coming and we'll see you all again next week.
This has been an exclusive podcast of The Garden Show with Charlie Dobbin. Heard every Saturday morning at 9 on Zoomer Radio, the new AM 740. This podcast is proudly produced and presented by the Zoomer Podcast Network, home of great podcasts like Marilyn Lightstone Reads, Idea City on the Air, and The Garden Show.